Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We know that you could have taken out the time to listen to any other podcasts out there in the world, but in a season where we take a brief moment to give thanks to the ones we love and who have helped us along the way, we're truly thankful that you are taking out your precious time to listen to us and ensure that you're staying up to date on all the latest and greatest to take shape in the league we appreciate and know as the NBA. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of the New 24 podcast. For those keeping tabs wherever you are, listening around the globe, my name is Gabriel Wilkins, and I'm joined yet again beside my brother and a man of many talents and hustles, and my co-host himself, Torrence Stagger. What's happening?
What's good, everybody? Welcome to episode 3. Let's get to it.
Yes, sir. On last week's edition of the New 24 podcast, me and Torrence talked about the red-hot Houston Rockets, who continue to keep the party rolling out in Clutch City, having won 7 out of their last 10. As of this recording, currently sit a game above the Los Angeles Lakers for the third seed in the West standings, entering week 6 of the NBA season, on top of a pair of other young teams in the Orlando Magic and Oklahoma City Thunder, two franchises who, despite losing a pair of young stars on their rosters to injury as of recent times, have still found a way to win games and remain within the top 3 of their standings in their respective conferences as we inch closer toward the final month on the calendar year 2024. Now, we'll continue to take a further look into the future of the league by taking the time to discuss the recent play of several first-year players in this year's draft class and other under-the-radar rookies who have impressed us the most thus far. However, before getting into that discussion, let's take some time to pay homage and give kudos to a few standout performers and accomplishments we saw take place over the last 7 days within the association as part of our opening tip-off segment. Beginning with the team that, despite taking a loss on the road at the hands of the Boston Celtics last week, still remains atop the Eastern Conference in the Cleveland Cavaliers, who became just the 9th team in NBA history and the first since the 2015-16 Golden State Warriors start the season with a 17-1 record through the first 18 games of the season after knocking off the Toronto Raptors by double digits at home this past weekend, in addition to Charlotte Hornets All-Star guard LaMelo Ball, who recently became the second fastest player to reach 600 career three-pointers made in NBA history after coming off a career-high 50-point outing against the Milwaukee Bucks. Joining the recently retired great Kemba Walker is the only players in Hornets history to ever record 50-point games as members of the franchise, as well as the future Hall of Famer and man who sits atop the record book with the most triple-doubles ever in NBA history, Russell Westbrook of the Denver Nuggets, whose 12 points, 14 assists, and 10 rebounds collected in a road win against the Memphis Grizzlies was enough for the 9-time All-Star to record triple-double number 200 in his illustrious career. So with all of that said, Torrence, what are the top 3 things that stood out to you the most across the NBA landscape over the past 7 days since we last linked up to discuss some hoops?
Number one, I would definitely start with the Boston Celtics against the Minnesota Timberwolves Sunday. That was a game I was looking forward to since last season's regular season matchup. They had two of their better games last year. Jason Tatum, Anthony Edwards, two Olympians, two gold medalists, just two teammates over the summer, and two of the stars of starting five on Netflix. Now, with all of that being said, you would expect this game to be on ESPN, TNT, any of the broadcast partners that the league has, but no, the game was just a regional game on a Sunday afternoon. Turned out to be a great game. Celtics got the W. Came down to the wire. But, like, the league has to do a better job of putting games like that on prime time. Those are two of your young under 30 stars that are, you know, not Steph, Bron, KD. And these are the games that, like, draw in the real interest. And all both teams, like, pretty much played everybody. Like, the teams were healthy, too. And the people complain about stars not playing. You get a game where all the stars are playing, you know, including Jaylen Brown, Julius Randle, guys like Rob Dillingham, who could, you know, deserve a little light. So that stood out to me. Second, Spurs against Golden State. Seeing, you know, Wemby, who's been having not quite the season everybody's been, like, expecting, going out there defensively, really, like, taking over the game against Golden State, who's been, like, surging all year. And that's number three for me as well. Golden State off to, like, the number one seed in the West right now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm not somebody that's high on that team, and they're off to a great start. They're number one in the West. I believe they're going to win the NBA Cup. Still not sold on them for, like, the Larry O'Brien, the NBA Finals, but shout out to Golden State.
Yeah, Golden State right now is currently within the top two for the Western Conference standings as I pull it up right now as of this recording. They sit just one game behind the Oklahoma City Thunder for the top overall spot. They're the number two seed with a 12-5 record, 6-4 record over their last 10 games. And they currently sit 5-2 at home, recently coming off of a loss at the hands of the Brooklyn Nets, who went into the Chase Center and knocked them off, surprisingly, led by Dennis Schroeder, who had an incredible game. But, you know, you talk about some things that stood out to me, such as, you know, Minnesota-Boston, as we know, that's definitely a game that we share similar sentiments on. That's a game that you got to have on ABC Sunday Showcase or Saturday Primetime. Like you say, anytime you have two of your premier stars in the game under the age of 30, you want to sell those guys. And I watched both of those matchups last year. And after watching the second one last year in Boston, that was a matchup I'm not going to lie. Personally, I wanted to see as an NBA Finals last season with the way that those two went at it. And I look at the matchup this year, didn't get a chance to catch the first half, but caught that second half, and it was some incredible basketball being played. That's definitely something that the league has to work on. You know, you got so many people watching NFL football on Sunday. That's one of those games that needs to be, you know, after the new year, in my opinion, especially when you consider that Minnesota was going into Boston not having won a game at the TD Garden since like March of 2005 or something like that. Like, it's been almost 20 years since the Timberwolves have won in Boston. But you wouldn't know it if you saw the way those two teams played. And Minnesota had a chance late, you know, to either tie it up in overtime or go for the win. They decided to go for a win on a Nas Reed three, and it fell short. But the top three things that stood out to me the most across the NBA over the last 7 days since we last recorded, I would say, first and foremost, is the play of Scottie Pippen Jr. I got to give him a lot of credit for stepping up in the absence of Ja Morant, who just recently returned from his injury. He was incredible. You know, we always knew when he was coming out of college that he was capable of scoring among all three levels of the floor. But now you're starting to see that three ball start to fall rather consistently. And as a result, it's forcing defenses to respect him a little bit more. And he did a great job watching the other night against the Bulls, controlling the tempo of the game and the pace of the game, put up 30 and 10, shot 80% from the floor, was the first player ever do that at the United Center since his father did it back in the mid-90s. So it was real nice to see him do that in a building that his father won championships in, a building that he grew up watching games in alongside his family and friends, and to see Sam Smith, longtime Bulls reporter, showing him some love in the locker room, letting him know that, hey, we all rooting for you, pulling for you. Because if he continues to play at the level that he has, if he doesn't find an opportunity for himself in Memphis, like where he's starting or getting consistent minutes like he had in over the last seven games, he's going to get it somewhere in the league with the performances and the numbers that he's putting up. And I can't help but wonder whether or not Rob Pelinka, when he's looking at the production that Scottie Pippen Jr. has put up, isn't thinking about, you know, that missed opportunity when he let him go and opted to sign Gabe Vincent instead. You know, that's looking like a opportunity loss, especially when he went undrafted out of Vanderbilt and produced very well in the summer league, and they just let him walk, you know, after having him develop in their system. And me and you have talked about the Lakers organization, how they do a great job of not only drafting guys, but developing players. That's a player that you could say that the Lakers helped develop in some respects, but they're not reaping the dividends off of it. And as a result, Memphis has been able to stay afloat in the absence of Ja Morant alongside of Desmond Bane with the player Scottie Pippen Jr. At the helm, and stay within thick of things in the Western Conference. So I've been impressed by that. And the second thing that stood out to me the most was the play of James Harden and the Los Angeles Clippers, who currently have won 5 out of their last 6 games and sit within the middle of the pack in the Western Conference standings. And you look at what he's been able to do, he doesn't get enough credit for how he's been able to reinvent himself at this stage of his career. We're talking about a guy that's 35 years old who has won multiple scoring titles, multiple assist titles. But now you're seeing him round it out and find a balance in between with his game, you know, like getting 20 and 10 consistently at this age in year 16 of his career. And, you know, you see a lot of people shit on him sometimes because of the way he's manipulated the game, you know, and it's times where he has foul hunting. It's times where his playing style may not be conducive to your life. But when you put it all together and you look at the body of work in his career and you realize that this man has been in the league for 16 seasons and has yet to miss a playoff in his career, that's remarkable. You know, not even LeBron James, no disrespect, can say that. And he's continuing to play at an all-star level for a Clippers team that has needed him to do it in the absence of Kawhi Leonard, and alongside of Norm Powell, who just recently went down with a hamstring injury. So I tip my cap to him, as well as Jeff Van Gundy, who I believe has lit a fire in his back, you know, as of late, you know, stressing the importance of defense and detail to Harden, a guy that is, you know, lived in the Houston area for many years following his career with the Rockets and watched Harden, had a good relationship with him. It's nice to see those guys coming together and making a positive contribution alongside of Tyronn Lue, who is a coach that me and you both respect and know is one of the top guys in the league when it comes to making adjustments game in and game out on a weekly basis in the league. So that was another thing. And last but not least, I got to give credit to LaMelo Ball, man. Outside of Giannis Antetokounmpo, he's the only player in the league averaging 30 points with 5 assists and 5 rebounds per game. He just became the second fastest player, as I mentioned earlier, to reach 600 three-pointers made or more. And when you think about the amount of games he's missed over the last couple of years, that's remarkable. And I think the best is yet to come for this guy. You know, you see a lot of people talking shit online about, well, he's putting up these empty stats on a bad team, but they're not paying attention to the fact that he's doing this with several of his main guys down. Miles Bridges is hurt right now. Mark Williams has yet to make his season debut. And you add that up with all these injuries, despite playing alongside of Brandon Miller, who's playing some incredible basketball and making for a nice sidekick beside LaMelo, you know, I got to tip my cap, man. He's looking like the best point guard in the league. And I said it a year ago this time that, in my opinion, when he's healthy, he is one of the preeminent point guards in the league. And now he's proven it. Hopefully he can continue to stay healthy. He hasn't missed a game this season. And I believe if he keeps on that track, he's going to be going to his second All-Star game in the last 3 seasons.
Yeah, man. Like, Charlotte, they're one of my favorite teams to watch. Him and Brandon Miller, who Brandon Miller really is just coming back. He was out early in the season as well. So, ironically enough, LaMelo's been the healthy guy on the team so far this season. And he's getting adopted to his new coach, Charles Lee. And I know they had a bit of a discrepancy, leaving LaMelo on the bench in the fourth quarter recently. When, you know, he came back, bounced back after that. Yeah, man. Shout out to the Hornets.
Yeah, I really like what I'm seeing from them. I don't expect them to be a team that's going to be within the top 5 of the standings, but I think they're a team that they continue to play at the level that they have been and they get some reinforcements back. Be a team that makes, you know, some noise and threatens to make the play-in under Charles Lee, who I like his coaching style and I like the way that he challenged LaMelo. And I think LaMelo's done a great job taking it in stride and having a guy like Kemba Walker, who once suited up for that organization, by his side, serving as a player development coach and coordinator. I think that's going to help him and the rest of those young guys out very well. So I'm excited to see what growth lies ahead for this Charlotte Hornets roster that is featuring, you know, several young players. But now that we have taken care of the opening customs of the show, let's get right into the main discussion this week, beginning with a former Duke Blue Devil who was traded in his college dreads to Don Sixer Blue in Philadelphia and put himself in the front-runner seat to capture Rookie of the Year from season's end with his spectacular play as of late in Jared McCain. The 16th overall pick in the 2024 NBA draft, who has recently taken advantage of a plethora of injuries out in the city of brotherly love and done nothing but produce since being inserted into the starting five. McCain, who averaged under 12 minutes of floor time through Philly's first four games of the season, has scored at least 20 points or more in five out of his first six games in Philadelphia's starting lineup, becoming just the fifth rookie in Sixers history to string together five games with at least 20 points or more. As McCain recently poured in 30 points to help Philadelphia snap a five-game losing streak at home against the Brooklyn Nets in NBA Cup play just last week. Torrence, despite the year that it is shaping up to be out in Philadelphia right now, Jerry McCain has provided a major source of hope and joy for most Sixers fans as of late with his play. In addition to his confidence that he's displayed in the midst of his finest hour to date in his career, going as far as publicly declaring on camera that he is indeed the rookie of the year after hitting one of his six triples on the night late in the fourth quarter against the Nets. McCain currently leads all rookies in total points, scoring, and three-pointers made as of this recording. In your own words, what makes Jerry McCain the rookie of the year frontrunner to you above the rest of his peers right now?
Right now, I would say that he's the rookie of the year to most people. He's not my personal rookie of the year at the moment. But what makes him the front runner? I mean, he stepped into a role that he didn't have at the beginning of the season and taking full advantage of it. And that's kind of like the story most rookies want to have. You know, you just want your opportunity and you make the most out of it. And it's been all type of chaos in Philadelphia this season. Joel Embiid's been down. Well, coming out early saying he's not playing back-to-back, then he's down. Paul George has been down with injuries twice. Tyrese Maxey has been down. And the kid who's been getting on everybody's nerves apparently on the internet all summer and through training camp in the preseason and still on the team bus during the season to where Kyle Lowry had to tell him to cut the camera off, he's been the most consistent player on the team this season. As a rookie, you know, the three-point shooting, like the fearlessness, he's getting to the line at a pretty good rate for a rookie in limited minutes. And when you see him and Tyrese Maxey, to me, they kind of remind me of Dame and CJ. That, like, both being 6'3", aggressive scores, three-point shooting, we can play off the ball. I'm looking forward to those two playing together, like with the Sixers, more than the supposed big three we were supposed to have at the beginning of the season. Like right now, I'm more so with this backcourt of the future that they could have if they continue to go with it.
Well, you bring up some great points, but for me, I don't know who the rookie of the year is right now. I'll be honest, like that, it's still early in the season for me. I'm assessing it. But I think what makes Jerry McCain the rookie of the year frontrunner is partly what you mentioned. Like you said, he has taken advantage of the playing time that he has received. And it's a story that's kind of eerily reminiscent to the first season in which I managed to do this show back at Radio DePaul with Donovan Mitchell, who was in Utah coming off of the bench for about a month or so. And then a key injury happened, I believe, to Ricky Rubio at the time. And he stepped in to the starting five, and he never left. You know, he was averaging 20 a night, and ever since then, he's taken off, and we've seen what he's doing right now, going from Utah to Cleveland and with the Cavaliers team that has the best record in the league. That's pretty much the parallel that I see between Donovan Mitchell's rookie year and Jerry McCain's. And I think what makes him the rookie of the year frontrunner is he's putting up mad numbers at a rate that his peers are not. And just watching his game, what I like about his game and what impresses me the most watching him is just the fact that he's always ready in catch and shoot situations. He has his hands up, you know, when guys are setting him up. And then when he has the ability or he's getting called on to create a play off the dribble, he's executing rather well. You know, I know a lot of people have an issue in the NBA nowadays with guys taking a ton of threes. Jerry McCain takes a ton of threes. But when he does, he's locked and loaded, ready to shoot. and he's knocking them down at a high clip. And then he has the ability to use his in-between game to get to within the nail area of the floor. And once he gets you on his hip, you know, he has a nice fluid release where he's able to shoot over you despite being 6'2 or 6'3 and knock it down. And he likes getting to that nail area of the floor alongside of the elbow, and he's making a positive contribution there.
What's the nail area of the floor?
For those that don't know, the nail area of the floor is the middle of the free throw line.
Okay.
That's
and
what
what's
it
is. What and what's the elbow?
The elbow would be the area either to the left or right nearby the free throw line.
All right, cool.
But that's really what Jerry McCain has been able to do thus far. And I just like the energy that he's provided the team. Yeah, you can tell he's a young kid, and I can see how veterans could be annoyed by the social media presence and the following alike. But he's having fun, and that's what you love to see. And that's something that I think this team needs in the wake of such a horrid start.
A dancing ass coworker. Like, nobody likes a dancing ass coworker. Like, let's just be honest.
But see, I give him a pass, man. He's 20 years old, man. So he just got out of college. You know, it's different, man.
But when you see your dancing ass 20-year-old coworker, you're annoyed. You know, so it's okay. It's understandable that Kyle Lowry wants him to cut the camera off because
I'm not saying it isn't. But it's just cool to see a youthful energy sometime in the league, and a guy that's playing as well as he is, enjoying himself. That's just like he talked about his comments saying, "I'm the rookie of the year." He was like, "Yeah, I was in the moment. I was feeling myself."
But that's why you gotta like you grow to respect him because he gonna do him, and he's you know he putting up the numbers on the court. So it's like we gotta just deal with the shit, you know.
Yeah, I mean, as long as he ain't out there being unprofessional, I mean, I'm cool with it, man. Like, hey, let that kid do him. And I know a lot of people didn't like a variety of things when it came to Jerry McCain. However, his game has always been on point dating back to when he was in high school. And now he's applying that to the professional level after having a good year at Duke. And, you know,
he everything the old heads don't like.
I know. But sometimes, man, you know, it's your time.
Yep.
And right now, it's his time. And it's cool to see that. You know, like I say, even though I'm in my 30s, I can appreciate seeing the young guys having fun. So, you know, last week we discussed teams that not only possess size within their backcourt, but length within it, going as far to say that this is what the future of the league looks like and how without it, it might be tough to win the prize that all the top teams covet, being the Larry O'Brien Trophy. We're seeing Jerry McCain thrive and show the makings of a potential all-star down the road, beside one already in Tyrese Maxey right now. However, one could state that the pairing is severely undersized backcourt when you look at them. McCain's listed at 6'3", Maxey's listed at 6'2", and they face questions about this from the local media in Philly, despite looking phenomenal playing beside one another. Do you believe that this is a backcourt pairing that can thrive together when you look at the long-term picture with the Sixers? I know you say it's a backcourt that reminds you of Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, and I can see that just watching them and seeing the clips and the highlights, you know, on a night-to-night basis. But is this one that you think could thrive long-term?
Yeah, it could definitely thrive long-term. I mean, right now, in the short term, if they can get everybody healthy, you've picked up another piece that you probably weren't expecting to get a lot from in Jerry McCain this season. At the very least, he can stand around a three-point line and knock down some threes or come play a six-man role, you know, if they make any changes. Dame and CJ made it to a conference final. They had a lot of successful seasons. Same with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. I mean, DeMar DeRozan's like 6'6", but Kyle Lowry's about 6 feet. So it's kind of the same in some aspects. As long as guys get after it defensively and you got good rim protection behind them, I mean, that's a backcourt that could be putting up about 50 points and close to 20 assists a night, you know, in a few years. So, I mean, that's a lot of production you passing up on if you decide to break it up.
Yeah, I don't see them breaking it up. I'm very curious to see how far it could go. But like you said, I just believe when it comes to constructing a roster going forward, you're definitely going to have high impact wings that can defend multiple positions alongside of a big that has the switchability to, you know, come out on a perimeter as well as dropping coverages and protect the rim as well. So I like them from an offensive standpoint. Like you said, they're going to get their buckets and they're going to create a lot of shots for guys that play beside them. And I think even though a lot of people are laughing at the Sixers right now who sit at 3-13, this is a positive development in their season. Because when you're able to see a young talent that you drafted in the middle of the first round playing at this level after not really being expected to play a significant amount of minutes, you can hang your hat on this if you're Daryl Morey in the front office there in Philadelphia and continue to try and build the roster to the best of your ability no matter what happens moving forward.
Yeah, for sure.
But I want to move away from the one-and-done rookie out in Philadelphia to discuss the play of another intensive talent who, despite being selected one pick after Jared McCain, is proving to be just as potent of a knockdown shooter from three-point range as his 2024 draft classmate, while also making his own case to try and snatch the Rookie of the Year award away from him in the process. As rookie small forward Dalton Connect has played a pivotal part in helping the LA Lakers capture wins in 6 out of their last 8 games, on top of putting himself in exclusive company along the way. In just his fourth career start last week, Connect posted a game-high 37 points on 12 for 16 shooting from the floor and a 124-118 home win against the Utah Jazz during NBA Cup play without committing a single turnover on the evening. As Connect would go on a personal run of his own, scoring 18 straight points on the way towards hitting 9 three-pointers to tie an NBA single-game rookie record. Although Connect has managed to come off the bench mostly to start his NBA career, Torrance, the 2024 SEC Player of the Year from Tennessee has proven to be a viable option when inserted into the starting five, averaging almost 20 points per game on 55% shooting from the field, 50% from downtown in the 5 games he started for the Lakers thus far. Connect currently ranks 5th among all rookies in total points, 3rd in scoring, 2nd in three-pointers made. This was a player that really caught my eye last year when watching him on the way to lead the Volunteers to the Elite Eight this past March. I know you watch a ton of Lakers games, as you said on our most recent podcast episode. What has impressed you the most when watching a 23-year-old's wing his game at the next level?
Oh, man. Speaking with bias, that the fact that he knocks down open threes. Somebody that's been watching the Lakers a lot, especially since Bron been over there, this team lives and dies by open threes. If they make open threes, they're unbeatable. But if they don't make them, they get ran. So it's very important. And for the last couple of years, guys haven't been knocking down threes. When you play with LeBron and AD, both of those guys draw double teams. And when they run pick and roll together, the entire defense collapses right into the paint to try to stop either or. So the ball gets kicked out. And when it lands in Gabe Vincent's hands, he misses. Dalton Connect, he's been knocking this shot down, like you said, at a very high rate. And what also impresses me most is that he gets to the rim. He actually puts the ball on the floor and pulls up for mid-range, gets to the rim. So he's not just a stationary three-point shooter. Like, he's a scorer. And this is the second year in a row where we have an upperclassman making a high impact for a good team in the league. Last year it was a Hawkins on the Heat. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to see more of, like, as a fan, like, incentivize guys to stay in college. Because these guys, like, they on good teams. They're getting like good minutes. They have a defined role. And you see guys like this, and you can tell early that they have a chance for longevity in the league already, despite them coming in a few years later than what's the norm now.
Out of all the college prospects I got a chance to watch last year in the tournament, Stephon Castle at UConn, Donovan Clingan, at UConn. Two players that I like a lot and happen to be lottery picks, and deservingly so. Dalton Kornet and Terrence Shannon Jr. out of Illinois were the two players that stood out to me the most. And the reason why Dalton Kornet's game stood out to me the most is because even though his defense was a concern to me, I knew with his offensive skill set that it was going to translate to the league right away. You could tell just watching his game, he was older than most of the guys on the floor, but he played at a pace where you couldn't speed him up or slow him down a little bit as well. So that's what I always liked about his game. Like you said, he could play on the ball as a secondary playmaker. He could play off the ball. If you want to run some screen actions with him, you can. What he did the other night against Utah, or last week rather, it was Klay Thompson-esque. And I'm not bullshitting when I say that. Like, to see him get on that little hot streak like that, you don't see that too often in the NBA. And when you see that, you have to pay homage and respect to it. And to see it from a rookie, although a seasoned rookie, I had to applaud it. And it was very fun to watch in live time because, like you said, when you're playing next to LeBron James, it's very important to be able to knock down open shots and catch and shoot situations, especially if you're a wing. If you don't, you're not going to be in his favor. And you're not going to be in AD's favor too much either. So,
What's going to happen when you don't make threes on Bron teams, bro?
I don't think I even need to say it. I think you're going to get shipped out of town. That's what's going to happen more than like, you'll get shipped out of town. You're going to be playing for a team that's, you know, among the bottom feeder of the league and not lottery bound. That's just what it is. You know, like when you play in those situations, you got to be able to execute knockdown shots. And I think he's shown an ability to do that. And when you add on the fact that he can put the ball on the deck and get to the rim, he's nice as an off-ball cutter, and he moves without the ball extremely well, that is going to bode significantly well in his favor going forward. I agree with you.
And one last thing. He has a coach who has an affinity for Shooter, him being one himself. He has someone that's like excited about his development, who's actually really looking to put him in the best situations possible for his game to thrive. So he's landed in a dream situation.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought about that. And you bring up a great point with J.J. Redick, him having a similar skill set to a Dalton Kornet. And it's kind of funny, you know, Kornet 4 wearing that number that was J.J. Redick's number. So it's been pretty cool to see that. You know that, like you said, he's going to do everything in his power to ensure that this kid is successful at this level. But although it's far too premature and early for us to anoint Kornet as the league's next best superstar, his teammate, who we just talked about not long ago in this segment, LeBron James, recently said that he didn't think Kornet would fall to them in the draft at number 17. But is grateful to have him by his side, as LeBron then would go on to say that the other 16 teams fucked it up on draft night. You know, now prior to transferring to Tennessee, Kornet began his college career at the JUCO level in his home state of Colorado before spending 2 years in Northern Colorado and deciding to use the extra year of eligibility that he was granted due to the COVID-19 pandemic so that he could enter the transfer portal. Many observers, including myself, believe part of the reason why Kornet failed in the draft was due to the fact that teams found an issue with his age. You talk about how guys like Dalton Kornet and Jaime Jaquez, who came out of UCLA a season ago and is now with the Miami Heat, both four-year players, you talked about how they have shown that it's okay to stay in college for 4 years and make sure that you're well-developed for success at the next level. Do you believe that scouts and executives with narrow-minded approaches when it comes to the selection of players through the draft is hurting more franchises than not in recent memory? And if so, what do you think could be done to change that?
Yeah, it's the league is focusing too much on potential, you know, and it's allowing GMs and owners to get away with tanking, which leads to low salaries because you're not going into the luxury tax. You're not spending a lot of money. So you're making money. And if you play And if you're in a market like Chicago, we got diehard sports fans. So we're going to sell out the arena anyway. So the teams are not incentivized to even be great. And picking the guys like Dalton Kincaid, those guys fit in better with veteran players. They usually already have a defined role that they can step into by that point. They know their game. You know, it might not be high on the, you know, potential, but how many guys actually reach their ceiling? And really, what do they say? The prime age is about 27 to 31 in the league. So who's to say a guy couldn't make an all-star, super all-star to superstar leap between the ages of 23 to 27, no matter where their starting point is in the league? You know, and I just think that at the end of the day, the best talent is going to show itself early. You know, the guys that came out of high school, Kobe, LeBron, KG, T-Mac, within, like, by the year three, it was clear, like, who they were going to be in the league. So regardless if a guy's 19, 23, I just think they need to focus more on picking more ready-made players in at the top of the draft instead of the potential, because that allows teams to just BS too long instead of, like, putting a winning product on the court.
And not only does it allow your team to BS for too long, it could set your franchise back for the next 7 to 10 years, especially when you had a prospect in mind that you know would have been a perfect fit on your roster, but you didn't take them because you went with the upside. And don't get me wrong, there are some guys that I've liked due to their potential and their upside, but you got to be cautious and observant with how you base your decision with those picks. I believe that scouts and executives being narrow-minded with their approaches has hurt more franchises due to the fact that everybody is seeking to find the next so damn bad. Whereas sometimes you may not be able to find the next right then and there, but you might be able to find something that could fit in your system immediately. And over time, you realize that you hit on a diamond. And that player goes from, like you say, being a fringe starter to an all-star and eventually a superstar. Guys work their way into those roles. I think what could be done to change it is the stigma that we place on guys. You know, just because a guy stays in college for 4 years, it doesn't always mean that his game isn't going to translate to the next level. And we should know better, because in the past, we've had players stay for 3-4 years in college, and they've gone on to have great careers. You know, we talk about the San Antonio Spurs with Victor Wembanyama. Well, the big man that he's following in the footsteps of, that had a dominant foothold for over 20 seasons in San Antonio, was a 4-year college player. His name was Tim Duncan. So when I look at that, I've never understood that. And even though I'm not trying to compare Dalton Kincaid's journey to Tim Duncan, you know, some guys are late bloomers. And we have to understand that as evaluators and fans and scouts of the game.
The Tim Duncan point, great for a lot of reasons too, because you hear that one of the reasons that they want to get the guys early is, oh, so I could have them for 10, 15, 20 years possibly if this turns out to be one of those guys, right? You also hear like, oh, well, you know, we pick a guy later, then he's going to give us less games. So like you said, Tim Duncan went to college for 4 years and still had a 20-year career in the NBA and pretty much won 50 games every season, won 5 championships, and stay relatively healthy for the 20 years. So sometimes these teams, like, they come up with all of these different analytics and strategies to just distract from things that they ultimately can't control. How could you predict Grant Hill's career? How could you predict that Tim Duncan lasts 20 years? So you should always be trying to take the best player available.
And it's funny that you bring up Grant Hill's career, because even though it was, you know, hampered by injuries, you look at his first 7 seasons, he hit the league ready to go, you know, from day one. And He was a four-year guy out of Duke. So when you put all that together, I've never understood that. And we talk about Tim Duncan and his career. He was a late bloomer in a sense because he didn't start playing basketball until he was 14. He was a swimmer, you know, when he was coming up as a kid. And I don't think a lot of people even give him enough credit for that to be able to make that transition to go from a 14-year-old that was trying to learn the game and master it to by the time he's 22 years old, he's in the NBA Finals against the New York Knicks, and he wins his first championship. But keeping the conversation back on Dalton Connect, who's a guy that's in the running for the Rookie of the Year award, he's garnered a ton of praise, as we know, from the main guys in LA's locker room. Like we highlighted LeBron's praise of his play. Anthony Davis recently said, you know, Connect could do more than just shoot, and also added by saying that the team oftentimes gets mad at him when he doesn't shoot. And Connect, I believe, has seized the moment when Granted started minutes while Rui Hachimura was sidelined for a few games with a sprained ankle prior to just recently coming back last weekend. We talked about how J.J. Redick, Lakers head coach, recently said that he wants to continue giving Connect a considerable amount of time on the floor. We know that the Lakers have a few needs that they'll likely seek to address at the trade deadline. We talked off the record about how getting a center in the fold that can do the dirty work, such as rebounding, setting screens, and slide Anthony Davis over to the fourth spot to help them in a ton of ways out west. Do you believe, based upon what Dalton Connect's shown up until this point, that he will make a current rotational piece like Austin Reeves available a couple of months from now?
I think the guys that are available on the Lakers have been the guys that have been available on the Lakers. I don't know if they want to trade these guys, Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, Rui Hachimura. I don't know if they will be able to trade these guys, Gabe Vincent, Jared Vanderbilt. But I don't think Dalton Connect has any real impact on that. Dalton Connect, though he's a good rookie, he's mostly getting minutes out of necessity more than just pure production. Like I said, this team struggles to shoot the ball, so the fact that we have somebody that at least can knock down open threes right now at a high rate, maybe he goes through a rookie slump at some point, but like he's really more so out there to like help with the spacing on the court. But D'Angelo Russell, I mean, most Lakers fans have been wanting him out anyway. Austin Reeves, if they can get a superstar back, like if they're getting Trae Young back possibly, then maybe you put Austin Reeves in the trade, but I don't think that they'll trade Austin Reeves ultimately. He kind of has Bron and AD's trust. And right now, like, I think you got to lean on that more than anything if you're the Lakers.
I think it's a debatable question in my opinion. That's why I posed it, because when you look at Connect and Austin Reeves, even though Austin Reeves has a little bit more experience and he's played in multiple postseasons up until this point in his career and been in a Western Conference final, I look at those two players and they have similar skill sets to me. Yeah. And both, you know, have been questioned or oftentimes maligned for their play defensively. But we've also seen Dalton Connect, you know, show some improvement and make some strides as a defender since being inserted into the lineup and getting more consistent minutes with the second unit. I'm not sure if they'll trade Austin Reeves, but I do believe, like you say, if a star becomes available, yeah, you have to consider it, especially with the way that Dalton Connect is playing, because we don't want to see a situation like we did with the previous regime in Los Angeles, where it's a tight playoff game and guys are struggling to knock down threes, but you're not calling on Dalton Connect's number off the bench when it's a possibility that he can help.
Yeah, definitely. But the whole Austin Reeves and Connect playing together thing, I like them as a bench unit or, you know, as a change of pace second unit together. I don't we just talked about Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland and Tyrese Maxey and Jared McCain. So there are backcourts of guys who have similar like play styles with in similar strengths and weaknesses. I think right now the Lakers need as many good players as they can have. So I don't know what team they're gonna ultimately like have to finesse to get rid of the like the. I won't call these guys dead weight because they're professionals, but somebody insert the word. But guys like D'Lo, Gabe Vincent, Jared Vanderbilt, guys who just really, it just hasn't really worked in L.A. Rui Hachimura, he's been very inconsistent. If you could just turn those guys into two, maybe three consistent, productive players, I think the Lakers will have a better chance going forward.
Now, we've talked about the play of the top two rookies who over the course of the season's first month alone have accounted for 7 of the 14 outings that rookies have either reached their top 20 points in a game with Jared McCain and Dalton Connect. Yet, we have also seen rookies such as Jalen Wells from the Memphis Grizzlies come onto the scene out of nowhere, making a name for himself with his play in year one, posting nearly 13 points per game on a 40% shooting clip from downtown, while also managing to hold his own effectively, defending the opposition's top playmakers on the perimeter in the absence of Desmond Bain prior to his return from injury in the lineup. As the second rounder out of Washington State has shown, you know, an ability to make some things happen on both sides of the ball when his number's been called upon by head coach Taylor Jenkins. Stephon Castle of the Spurs out of UConn recently won a national championship last year, posting 14.3 points and 4.5 assists per game over his last 10 outings since being officially inserted in the San Antonio starting lineup by assistant coach Mitch Johnson, who was taking over for Greg Popovich in the recent news of his health care. Which rookies, and you can allude to the ones just mentioned if you'd like, in this year's draft class outside of McCain and Connect, have impressed you the most just seeing the tape on them through the first 5.5 weeks of the season?
Definitely Stephon Castle on the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs, you know, they already have Wemby. Wemby's what? 7'4", 7'5". Ideally, he can play center, and in some lineups, he could play the four if you're able to put in another, like, center in there. Similar to the OKC Thunder, the Spurs got Stephon Castle pretty much developing himself to be possibly like the new Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Talking about 6'6", the ability to handle the ball, get to the rim and score. And defensively, I mean, him and Wemby did such a great job against Steph last week in Golden State. Held those guys to under 100 points. And we're talking about a guy in his second year at center and a rookie in his first year. And you got Chris Paul over there for one season to help possibly develop him and teach him some things the same way he was able to do with Shai in his last stint in OKC. And we see that Shai was an MVP candidate. Rob Dillingham was selected by the Spurs and he got traded. And everybody was like, man, you guys need a point guard. You guys need a point guard. Not understanding that they have their point guard, possibly, in Stephon Castle. They're going big. Like, yeah, we got a big 7'5" guy at center, but we plan on putting a bunch of 6'6", 6'8", guys around him on the defense. Like, at the end of the day, defense wins championships in this league. And, man, it's just great to see a guy, like, as a rookie come in and just have such a great defensive performance.
You know, one thing I realized about Stephon Castle watching him closely in college during the NCAA tournament, that kid a winner. You know, I had some questions about his ability shooting-wise at the next level, but he's actually shot the ball fairly okay for his first season and much better than I thought he would. And like you say, defensively, he's taking on the challenge. I was very impressed with his defensive play against Stephen Curry in one-on-one situation when he was isolated on him on an island. And the thing that really impressed me the most with him last week, he had a shot against Golden State where it was late. He airballed it, and he was kind of dejected. But he got right back on defense and made a play, getting a steal, And that helped him seal the game. And most rookies don't have that awareness, especially at his age, as young as he is, to make plays like that after having a hiccup on the other end of the floor, especially the offensive end of the floor. Just goes to show you what his mindset is and his like. And it's dope that he has a mentor like CP3 by his side, like you say, to show him the ropes. And, you know, you talk about how they could have their own version of it, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. If Stephon Castle can turn into that, that would be an impressive thing to see, because I'm looking at his ability to attack the rim and get downhill against guys. And I'm seeing the three ball slowly but surely develop a little bit. He keeps this up, you never know. But I love what I'm seeing. And he even had an impressive game this month against the Lakers where he put up 22 points and 5 assists, if I recall correctly, and was taking it to those guys, man. So he seems like a guy that gets up for the big games, and you like to see that. For me, one rookie that I haven't heard a lot of people talk enough about, and I don't know if it's due to the fact that he plays on the West Coast, is a guy that won the national championship besides Stephon Castle at UConn, and that's Donovan Clingan, man. He's doing things that we usually don't see from big men in their first year. He's blocked at least one shot a game in his first 17 games. Only three other players in the history of the league have ever done that. They all happen to be Hall of Famers: Alonzo Mourning, Shaquille O'Neal, and Paul Gasol. He had a game just recently against the Houston Rockets where he didn't score a single point, but he recorded 19 rebounds. His ability to alter shots and to make things happen on the glass changes games. And he managed to get 19 rebounds, I believe, in less than 25 minutes of playing time. Like, that's insane. And he had a big game a couple weeks ago against Minnesota where he put up 17 points with 12 rebounds and 8 blocks. You could tell when guys go inside the lane against him, they're definitely thinking about, you know, considering other options. Because when they go up against him, he's swatting everything. And the offense – it's still coming along. I think a lot of people are concerned as to whether or not his, you know, ability to stretch the floor will ever come into play. But if he plays at the rate that he has defensively, I think he's going to be just fine in the league. And he's drawing starts already in the absence of DeAndre Ayton, who's been injured. And I believe when Portland gets some things rectified come second half of the season, we're going to start seeing Donovan Clingan get a ton of minutes. And we're going to start seeing some nice, gaudy stat lines from that dude.
So, one question. So, do you believe that, one, DeAndre Ayton is in the way of his development at this point early? I mean, do you see enough from him where you're like, look, we just need to go ahead and just give him the minutes now because we're not making the playoffs? And then you look at the team, you got Rob Williams, you got DeAndre Ayton, and you still got Anthony Simons there. But at the same time, right now, what I'm hearing is you got Clingan, you got Shaedon Sharpe, you got Scoot Henderson. So do you need to remove that former three and just focus on the latter?
I'm focused on the latter because when I see the tape, I see the two-man game that him and Scoot Henderson have in the pick and roll. Especially that stood out to me a ton watching him against the Minnesota Timberwolves twice in over a 3-day span. And Shaedon Sharpe is coming into his own. I believe at some point they're going to get Robert Williams out the way via trade. I could definitely see DeAndre Ayton, if the situation presents itself to be an ideal one for both parties, getting shipped. And as a result, it's going to open up some playing time for Clingan as we get into the new year. I do believe that because this dude right now, it doesn't seem like it matters how many minutes he plays. He's leaving his impact on the floor. Like, he was the first player to go scoreless with at least 19 rebounds or more since Omer Asik in November of 2012.
So that's once again, that's a guy that's coming in and just figured out a role, is maxing it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like, and then he added 3 blocks in that same game alongside of a steal and assist. So, like, he's one of those guys that's very unique from the standpoint of he doesn't have to score to impact games. And when he does score, it's even grander. And he was a guy when he was in college. I remember his freshman year watching him in a tournament beside Andre Jackson Jr., now stars with the Bucks. And I'm like, when he comes, like the game changes. You can feel his presence and his energy on the defensive end of the floor.
Do you feel like, I mean, this might be a little bit too far ahead at the moment, but do you feel like those three guys fit together well on the court in theory, playing against Sharp and Scoot Henderson? Like, do their games fit
I still gotta watch
long
him a little
term?
bit. I still gotta watch him a little bit more. That's a great question. I still gotta watch him a little bit more and figure that out. But I do believe with their backcourt being as small as it is with Henderson and Sharp, that having a guy like Klingon back there does a ton of wonders, because if you get beat off the drive, I got somebody that can clean it up.
How big is Scoot and Shaedon Sharpe?
Shaedon Sharpe is what, maybe like 6'5"? And Scoot, I would say, is about 6'3".
Yeah, Shaedon Sharpe be getting up though. I ain't never even think that he was 6'5".
Yeah,
He
Shaedon Sharpe. Yes, Scoot is 6'3", and Shaedon Sharpe, as I look at the Blazers media guide right now, is 6'5".
yeah, man.
And
Yeah,
he plays, and
he
it's
play
interesting because
his
he play
vert
like a three
crazy.
sometimes.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
But yeah, I like Shaedon Sharpe a ton. And I think those three guys can find a way to work together. But I believe that the anchor of the future in Portland is Donovan Clink. I really do believe that.
Yeah, that's what's up. Because, yeah, like Portland, they haven't had many like bright spots since the Dame like trade. And it kind of seems like they are having like a rough time with the rebuild, not really having that one guy that they can like really build around. They just kind of have a bunch of pieces.
Yeah, and I think it's gonna take them some time, because if you really think about it, some people may say that it's year three of the Dame rebuild, but me personally, I look at it as year two, because this is the second, full season in which he's been out of the fold in the Rose City. But when I look at them, like, they're competing, like they're 7-11 through their first 18 games, and even though they're 4-6 in their last 10. Like, they just recently got a big win against the Houston Rockets. And it was in large part to players like Klingon and Simons, who hit some big time shots late in that fourth quarter. So I've been impressed with what I've seen from him. Zach Edey is another big man that I believe has shown an enormous amount of potential, especially after having a lot of questions about his game and how it would translate from college, where he happened to win National Player of the Year. In his junior and senior seasons, becoming the first player since Ralph Sampson in over 40 seasons to accomplish that. But looking at his game, I think he's going to show some skills that a lot of people didn't know that he had as his career develops and goes forward. You see him taking threes every so often when he's in his rhythm and he's feeling his game a lot.
Yeah, I wasn't sold on Zach Edey coming into the draft. I'm not somebody that watches a lot of college basketball. It's very different than the NBA. But
For
I
sure.
saw Zach Edey and I was like, yeah, he's big, but like he's slow. I don't know how he's gonna move around like on the pick and roll, defending the pick and roll, but he landed in an ideal situation in Memphis with a great point guard in Ja. And obviously another great point guard, it seemed like, well, good, and Scottie Pippen Jr. A good culture in Memphis as well. And he's been doing great. Like, honestly, his game has translated very well to the league. I know he dropped some weight, worked on his quickness. I think that now I can see him having a real bright future in the league.
Man, Memphis not getting talked about enough for me in regards to what they're doing over there with their player development. They're doing a
Yeah,
spectacular job.
and
Like
scouting.
they're doing their scouting department. Some people need to be getting poached from over there, like for real, because like Jalen Wells, I wasn't familiar with the kid. I really wasn't, and I was looking at numbers and stats, the like how he was keeping guys like Steph in check. But to actually see him up close and personal against the Bulls, putting up 26 off, I believe, 6 for 10 shooting from the floor. Like, man. And he was a guy that he wouldn't have gotten a lot of playing time if it wasn't for the Dez Bryant. And he's 6'8", could play the two or the three. Nice two-way player. You know, like, he's one of those guys, you look up at the stat sheet then and like, you don't realize that he had 20. But when you watch, like, his game, you can tell that he's getting after it, man. And that's what you love to see from those young guys, man. Not only just in the league, but over there in Memphis, where if they got guys that can continue to play like that, they're not going to miss too much of a beat.
Yeah, like you see, like you said, the player development. You got guys like G.G. Jackson, who came out of nowhere last season. Yeah. I wasn't familiar with Desmond Bane. He's turned into almost an all-star in the league. What's the foreign guy's name? And the player's small forward, power forward?
Santi Aldama.
Yeah, Aldama, like him as well. He's pretty from good. Spain. Yeah, like they've been able to find a lot of great role players. If only they can, like, you know, get Ja healthy, and maybe they need a wing. Like, if you could probably upgrade that Marcus Smart spot, maybe get some, like, you know, I wouldn't say a 3-and-D wing. Maybe a Brandon Ingram over there with the young guys they got. I mean, I think that could be something that could help Memphis get to the conference finals one day.
I don't disagree with you. And Brandon Ingram would be a hell of a pickup for those guys if they could find a way to come to terms on a deal. Because as we know, New Orleans is one of those situations right now. It's looking real murky, and it's a lot of questions over there in regards to what David Griffin, Swin Cash, and the front office representatives are going to do over there in the Big East. But, you know, sometimes, getting back to the rookies, we as fans of the game can place lofty expectations on lottery picks. Just all rookies in their first season at the NBA level fail to realize that they also have to put things together, you know, such as the fact that guys are jumping up to the highest level of competition at a time when their bodies are not only still developing, but their skills are as well in some respects. We understand that some guys find their footing quicker and some may find it later in this league. What makes the adjustment from the college ranks to the NBA level so difficult for first-year guys, in your opinion? And I know you don't watch a lot of college basketball, but I know you kept up with it enough in the past to understand that, like, it's a big difference between having a schedule in college compared to the NBA, where you play back-to-back some nights, three games or four nights, and et cetera.
Yeah, like when you're going from a 29-30-game schedule to 82, I know last year, Hami Hawkes, he spoke about it, that it got to, like, around December, January, and he was just worn down. And the vets on the team had to let him know, like, man, you still got 3, 4, 5 more months to go.
Right.
And I think that's one of the cool parts of watching the league is just seeing guys learn how to, like, take care of their bodies, like, from year one to year two, you know. How hard to push themselves night to night, especially when you fighting for minutes, fighting for a roster spot if you're a second round pick, fighting for your reputation if you're a lottery pick. And the adjustment, I mean, one of the reasons I don't watch college is, I know this is kind of an oxymoron, but it's like a lot of team ball. It's a lot of sets. It's a lot of movement. And in the NBA, you just get a ball to your best player and you try to make it happen. You know, I prefer the league when the league ran sets as well, when it was a good combination of it, where a guy like Kobe or Vince Carter or T-Mac, they was known for breaking a set more than it just not being any sets ran at all. Now we got a lot of pick and roll and mismatch hunting, which is cool. It kind of makes it more of a chess game, but I like more of a balance. But in college, I mean, I grew up watching Syracuse run the 2-3 zone. One day I turned on the TV, Syracuse was still running the 2-3 zone.
Oh, yeah, like, that never changed.
It's cool from a nostalgia standpoint, but I wonder, like, how many guys we don't see in the league because they weren't in a great position in college, you know, to show, like, the true, like, essence of their games. Like, you, like, take a team like Kentucky. Like, Devin Booker, he wasn't even starting for Kentucky, I remember hearing.
No, he wasn't.
And he was a 13th pick. Mm-hmm. You know, like, what if he went to Western Michigan or Michigan State, you know, where, like, maybe he's the only star on the team and we could have seen from the rip, like, man, Devin Booker, this guy putting up 20 in college. So you really don't even get a true sense of, like, who a guy is from college basketball to the NBA, in my personal opinion. I'd rather just wait for guys to show up when the season starts and I got a fresh look at all of them. That's just my opinion of
it. As someone who has watched college basketball, and I watched a ton of it when I was in college from 2011 through 2015, I watched a ton of it. It's a big difference between the game and the style of play. And, like, it's funny you bring up Syracuse in a 2-3 zone. My late grandfather was a huge Jim Boeheim fan, and I studied that zone a lot, and I like playing in it. But even though I like playing in it and I don't mind using zones or see teams in the NBA use zone coverages, I'm not in favor of it being used throughout the whole entirety of a game. I think it's something that you just, you know, wrinkle in and out through various points and segments of games when you need to. And I think it's really a last-minute desperation thing. But I think what makes the adjustment from the college ranks to the NBA level so difficult for first-year guys, like you said, it's the schedule. But some guys are trying to still find their role on teams as well. You know, like, you go from college where you may be the number one or number two option, and once you get into the NBA, depending on what team you're on, they don't need you to score 20 points a game. They just may need you to be a facilitator. Or maybe they need you to just be a good defender or knock down catch and shoot option. You know, whereas when you were in college, you were asked to be that go-to scorer with the game on the line all the time. You knew that you were going to have so many touches a game. I think the difference between the college game versus the NBA game, and something that I'm not trying to insult fans' intelligence, but I'm not sure if they necessarily understand, is that it's a big difference between spacing. And I think that's why we don't get a chance to see how great a player's game could translate to the NBA level in college. It's due to that, especially when we're talking about guards and wings. Like, the spacing is just different. And then you have some coaches in college who won't always allow you to play your game as freely as you would like to, and that you see within the NBA. So when it comes to the adjustment, I think it's important just to know your role and to understand the personnel that you're playing beside so that you know what you need to do in order to thrive and have a long career in the league.
So let me ask you this.
Sure.
I've seen in college football, the kid from Michigan is getting like $10 million.
Bryce Underwood.
And I'm sure that in the NCAA, there are guys who are going to get multi-million dollar NIL deals.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the NIL money is going to incentivize some potential lottery picks to stay in college multiple years to really focus on the things that you said right there were important, like learning winning habits, winning? You know, like, actually going through the trials and tribulations of learning to win, and you doing that during your college years, finding your role, you know, making those mistakes when a lot of guys' excuse and reason for leaving college was, man, I'm trying to make as much money as I can because we're not getting paid in college, I can get hurt. Well, now you're getting money. Most people won't work and make $1 million. So from that standpoint, You know, you off to a great start in life, period, whether, like, this works to go to the NBA or not. So do you think the NIL money will end up helping guys stay in college, or, like, do you have a different view of that?
I think it can help, but it depends on the kid and whether or not they have an open mind and a sound mind with the right personnel and people beside them to let them know, like, hey, your route doesn't have to be the traditional route or the way that's become the status quo over the last 20 years. You don't have to be a one-and-done prospect in order to find success at the next level. I think the NIL is great because it gives guys a fallback plan. You know, for example, like, if I didn't have a great freshman year, But my team happened to go to the Final Four, and I had some good games in the tournament, but I get some intel as I, you know, declare to go pro at the combine that, hey, you're not that top pick. And we, if we were to draft you and you were to declare officially and sign with an agent, you would be a second round pick or maybe undrafted. And yeah, maybe yeah, you need to take your ass back to school, you know, because you're getting good NIL money and you got a chance to increase your draft stock after hearing from scouts and executives, as well as members of your collegiate coaching staff about what your future is at the next level where you currently stand.
Yeah, because look at the incentives and different situations, different guys. Like, I look at Ben Simmons. A lot of the things that he was criticized about at LSU, they turned out to kind of be true in the league to a certain extent. As far as his attitude and how much he cared about the game and being a winner. Like, he went at number one, played college basketball, and didn't make the tournament. Like, yeah. Growing up, that would have been a real indictment on the guy. You know, we probably definitely wouldn't have made him the number one pick regardless of the hype because you ain't even make the tournament. So I look at a situation like Cam Reddish with Duke. If that team gets NIL money, does Cam Reddish, instead of coming out in the draft, does he go to another school the next season and go get the numbers that he was known for putting up when he was in high school and on the AAU circuit? And then does he have a better, like, career as a pro where, like, now he gets the opportunity to show that he can be a number one, number two option? He gets that opportunity because he went to Duke and kind of got relegated to the corner role, and that's a spot he struggled with at Duke, and he's still struggling with in the league. But you hear about him coming up, and guys are calling him the best scorer in his class.
Yeah, he was. And I do you one better. Could he have, you know, waited and stayed another year just at Duke? I don't think he had to transfer. I think he could have stayed another year at Duke without RJ and Zion in the mix and had a great campaign his sophomore year. But when you have that much hype and that much promise, I can understand it coming off of an Elite Eight run and, you know, why you would want to go to the pros. But, yeah, we are from that era where – guys could parlay their way into the top five of the draft based on how they played or performed in the tournament. I watched it firsthand in my home state with Darren Williams, you know, nearly 20 years ago. Do that. And he was a guy that when he came to the University of Illinois, he was a four-star recruit, maybe three in some panels, but it was certain guys that they had ranked highly ahead of him that didn't get as far as he did in the league. Or have the career that he ended up having.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So overall, if you had on a blank sheet, someone told you that you could pick a foreign prospect, a guy fresh out of high school, an upper class, let's just say junior, senior, or a one and done prospect. Who would you take?
If I knew their profile?
If I just gave just ran at rant at just average player at best.
You know, that's tough, man, because I'm the type of person I don't mind taking a swing for the fences, but in this current era of the NBA, what I'm seeing. And the success rate that I'm seeing with certain guys, I'm going to look at them upperclassmen. Because we just talked about Dalton Knecht and Jaime Jaquez, who had a great rookie season last year in Miami. Mikal Bridges was a guy that spent, I believe, 3 years at Villanova. Jalen Brunson spent 4 years at Villanova. Both of them won two national championships together. And then you have guys such as Buddy Hield, who was at Oklahoma for an extended period of time. He's had a great career. Yeah, he hasn't been an all-star that a lot of people might have thought or expected, but he's put together a great career for himself and been a serviceable role player and been one of the best marksmen in the game.
Yeah, because even like older guys like Al Horford, like he won two national championships and he had a long career and he pretty much won every team he was at.
Yeah.
You know, so like coming up, like Melo was like one of the first one and done players. You know, like after they got rid of the well, they didn't get rid of the high school rule yet, but when he went one and done, it was like the right way to do it, so to speak. Like he came in and won a national championship, and I was like, okay, he really doesn't have anything to prove, you know. Now guys are just one and done, like stepping on campus. It's not because they had a dominant year like a Michael Beasley or a Kevin Durant, where you're just like, okay, you guys went to these unique schools who are not really known for winning, but you went and put up great numbers and did still have some team success. So I kind of like, I agree with you. Like right now, I would probably say it's best to take an upperclassman or a foreign player to a certain extent that they already have pro experience, like a Luka Doncic type.
Yeah. Yeah, because just being around Luka his rookie year, I had the pleasure of having a conversation with him his rookie season in Milwaukee. You could tell that he processed the game very differently than most of his peers in that draft class. And you saw where he was going. And he was one of those guys, like, once he got to December, he got on a hot stretch, and he never looked back. And you could understand why.
Yeah, like, and then you take, like, an Anthony Edwards, and it's like, you take an Anthony Edwards, a guy like that, he's one and done, but he kind of falls under that Beasley, Kevin Durant type situation. Like, he went to a Georgia.
Yep.
So, it was like, you know, night to night, it was kind of on him, you know, each night. I prefer the guys who are going to be the 20-plus per game scorers to go to schools like that instead of, like, the stacked rosters.
Yeah, but I think we're kind of getting back to that. But I think the reason why we got the stacked rosters era within college basketball was due to the AAU circles and guys who play beside other guys having a chemistry and feel for one another's game, wanting to team up in the quest to win national championships. I don't think a lot of guys really thought about what their careers would look like post college all the time. I really don't. Because if they did, I don't think some of them would have made the decisions they made. And I know some guys that I won't name for, you know, the sake of the show, who didn't make the league but were all Americans. And I know for a fact if they could go back in time and redo the decisions they made to attend the colleges that they did, they wouldn't have done that.
I said, not fair enough, I understand.
Yeah, but carrying along from the rookie convo at this time to discuss a few of the top games that fans should have their eyes on over the holiday week, you got Jalen Brunson returning back to the place where his NBA career all started in Dallas. He and his all-star castmate Carl Anthony Towns look to help the New York Knicks stay afloat in the East against Kyrie Irving and defending Western Conference champion Dallas Mavericks in an interconference showdown on ESPN at 6:30 p.m. Central Time to tip off the action on Wednesday night, followed by the nightcap game on the Worldwide Leader in Sports that features a pair of teams in the Western Conference who currently sit within the top two of the standings as of this recording, as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Thunder look to maintain their winning ways in the second game of their four-game road trip, taking on Stephen Curry and the Golden State Warriors out of San Francisco at 9 p.m. Central Time on Thanksgiving Eve. Other games on the national radar include an NBA Cup matchup on Black Friday, where James Harden and the LA Clippers will make the trip to the land of 10,000 lakes to go toe-to-toe against the young phenom Anthony Edwards at 6:30 p.m. Central Time on ESPN, followed up by Thunder at Lakers in Los Angeles to conclude the Friday night doubleheader. Although there will be no games played on Thanksgiving Day, and we know most around the globe will be tuned into NFL action on that day, we have a few intriguing matchups over the course of the week that fans should pay attention to. We've already discussed the trio of upcoming matchups and didn't even talk on the Sunday evening showdown where Donovan Mitchell and the Cleveland Cavaliers will have the chance to avenge their lone loss to date as of this recording at home against Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and the defending champs in the Boston Celtics at 5 p.m. Central Time on NBA TV to cap off the weekend. What are some other games to you that fans should have their eyes on in week six, Torrance?
Oh, first up, definitely checking out the Celtics and Bulls Friday night NBA Cup game.
Yeah.
Lonzo should be back. I always think that when Lonzo's healthy for the Bulls, it makes a big difference with that team. Celtics, number one defense. Bulls, we play one of the fastest paces in the league. I'm just curious to see, like, you know, what we have against the best team in the league. You know, we tend to play up to our competition a lot of times. So we definitely can make that, like, definitely can make that one a great game. Monday night, we got the Lakers at Minnesota. Anytime, you know, we can get LeBron against Anthony Edwards, I'm always going to be locked into that matchup. They haven't played since opening night, I believe.
No, they haven't.
Yeah, and OKC Houston Sunday night as well, 6 p.m. Houston at home this time. Southwest Division matchup. Two of the, like, top four teams in the West right now. So that should be a good one.
One game I got highlighted is an 8 p.m. Central Time game in Phoenix. Got Kevin Durant set to return this week against the Los Angeles Lakers in NBA Cup action. That game will be final by the time this episode drops. Bradley Beal will also be set to return that game as well. Phoenix is currently 9-7. They slipped a little bit in the standings since we last talked about them in the opening episode of the show. But they're going to be at home against Stephen Curry and the Golden State Warriors, a team that we haven't really gotten a chance to talk about a lot through the first three episodes of this podcast, but as Torrance alluded to, they're off to an incredible start this season. And defensively, they're kind of looking like the Golden State teams of old from the championship years a little bit, despite the lack of size. I'm curious to see in that game how Golden State responds to the challenge of going up against one of the NBA's elite scorers behind enemy lines. So I really want to see that game. That's an 8 p.m. game on NBA TV. And another game that I really would like to see as well is going down on Sunday. And you alluded to it, actually, is Oklahoma City and Houston. You know, these are two teams that we talked about last week, being, you know, the top under 25 teams in the Western Conference, respectively. Just had the pleasure of watching Oklahoma City wreak havoc on a Kings squad that's struggling defensively. This Rocket squad, man, they looking legit. And if it's any game that you want to leave in the season to make your mark on, it's against the top teams in the league. These teams went back and forth last year in March, where Jalen Green had an incredible performance and knocked off the Thunder and OKC prior to them going on their run in the playoffs, where they got defeated in the second round by the Dallas Mavericks. I'm curious to see how the rest of the guys in Houston come out for that game, especially with it being a big-time home game, albeit on a Sunday night. And you know a lot of fans going to be watching football, but if you're a true basketball fan, that's definitely a game that you do not want to miss. So those are really my two main games this week that I have my eye on. You bring up Celtics and Bulls. It's funny, for those that don't know, we're recording this podcast in Chicago. That's a game that I thought about going to for that reason. Like you said, it's an NBA Cup game, and you know it's going to be a big crowd there at the UC at the Madhouse on Madison to check out defending world champions.
Oh, yeah, man. Definitely should be dope, man. Check it out.
For sure. Well, that's a wrap on this week's episode of the New 24 Podcast. If you've enjoyed what you've heard thus far, please make sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening from and leave that 5-star rating, as we truly appreciate all of your support. We're now available on Apple Podcasts alongside Spotify, Amazon, and Samsung Podcasts, among a bevy of other major podcasting platforms. You can also stay tapped in with us and make sure you don't miss a single episode by staying up to date with episode releases every Wednesday across our RSS feed that you can find at rss.com/podcast/TNTF. You can follow us on X as well at What Gabe Said, and Torrance himself at TStacks_ to converse on the game, among other things, to keep the conversation on the topics you enjoy alive and well. For myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and Torrance Stagger, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.